Live from Houston, Texas, this is Big Ideas Small Business with your host, Laura Camrath and Brian Gendron. And now, the music of Max Flynn.
I'm starting to feel a little crazy again. I think it's time I start to pack my things.
Good afternoon. This is Big Ideas Small Business, and we are here with Laura Camrath. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm always doing good, Laura. And we're also here with our very special guest, Eddie Turner, the Leadership Accelerator. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Brian. Thank you and Laura for having me.
Yeah.
Really excited to be here.
Thanks for being on the show. I'm like so excited to hear what you have to say today.
Thank you.
The pleasure is all ours, Eddie. And so Eddie's an executive and leadership coach, a facilitator, keynote speaker, author, national media commentator, and soon to have a book come out, which we'll talk about a little later. So he don't sleep.
Basically.
Yeah. So we get into a fun fact that we like to share about our guests, but Eddie insisted that he share it himself. So we'd love to hear a fun fact, a background.
Oh no, you can share the one that you wanted to share. I was going to share one with you too.
Okay.
Very good. So, Eddie, you work at ATD. You don't just work there; you're the existing president of ATD Houston.
Yes. So interestingly, the work I do for ATD Houston as the president of the local chapter, of which we are one of the seven big chapters in all of ATD. Mm-hmm. And we are not paid for the work we do. All the work that we do is volunteer work. I actually do have a paid role with ATD that is separate. Mm-hmm. I am one of 100 ATD facilitators that facilitate global programming for our headquarters. And so the two programs I do, the most popular one is the coaching certificate program. Mm-hmm. This allows individuals who are not interested in becoming a professional coach, but rather they're managers inside their organizations, and they understand that you need to be a coach first, manager second. Mm. So those individuals come to get that certificate program, and I facilitate that workshop that earns them that, as well as one that I'm doing right now, knowledge management. And the cool thing about that is there's an option for face-to-face or virtual, and we reach people all over the globe, so it's always fun.
Awesome.
Very cool. Do you have any graduates of any of those that you can brag on, or any success stories from the ATD, your time at ATD?
Well, I actually would go ahead and brag on all of them. I don't want anyone to be overlooked. Sure. But yeah, so the folks who get those certificates, they go on, they go back to their corporations, and every now and then they do email me and tell me about their success stories and how it really has changed, I don't want to say changed their life, but changed their work, changed their business because of the improvement. And the way the programs are constructed is that people get obviously not just the content, but we give them time to apply real time. And they are able to go back and say that application, they were able to apply it immediately. It is not uncommon that, especially for a virtual program where it's 6 weeks, it's not uncommon for literally in week two, someone to email me and say, I literally just tried this.
Wow.
And it worked.
Yeah.
And here's what the feedback is I received from my team or the feedback I received from my employer.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting program, and that's the chapter here in Houston, so it's a national or maybe possibly international organization?
Sorry, I didn't mean to conflate the two. So, yes, okay. So I'm the president of ATD Houston, right, which is a local chapter of ATD International.
International.
So ATD has about 35,000 members, if I remember correctly, 35,000 members in about 120 countries, I want to say.
Wow.
And so in the United States, we have roughly, now I have to remember what my numbers are, I want to say roughly there are about 100 chapters in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so of those, Houston's one, the seven have over 350 members.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we, why we call ourselves one of the big seven.
Wow.
And so that work I do is all volunteer. Everything that we all do on our board locally, which by the way, for the month of August, we were recognized as being the chapter of the month. All right. Whoa. Which is a big deal.
Yeah. It's
a testimony to the fact that our board and our volunteers are working hard to run our chapter in a fiscally responsible way, mm-hmm. which was one of the criteria. We have shared innovative ideas mm-hmm. with other chapters around the country, around the globe. And so that has that factored in. And we received a very nice letter from the CEO of ATD International, Tony Bingham. Mm-hmm. So for our volunteer work, that was the one component. And then the what I do for international as a facilitator, that's another role that I play.
Terrific.
That's awesome.
So how did you get to this position? Could you give us a little background? We heard you're from Chicago and you're about to take off home after this, but tell us a little bit about your background.
Yes. After this, I'll be moderating a Women in Leadership Symposium tomorrow. That's always an exciting event. So looking forward to doing that back at the home city. Originally from the Chicago area and originally was an IT geek, which is, I think, the fun fact that you wanted to share. And so in the IT space, I did everything from build, repair, troubleshoot computers to running the network through the ceilings like this. And running the wires, the cabling, so that we can network a building like this. And then managing the network, doing the administration for the network, building the small networks, doing websites, and teaching computers. Yeah. And then decided after 2007 that I really didn't want to do that anymore. And that was right when I was laid off by GE. Huh. I had started to desire to do more in the leadership space. And so I went to Northwestern University to get my degree as an adult in leadership and organizational behavior. Didn't have a degree because in the IT days, we didn't need degrees. Nobody cared about your degree. They said, where's your certification?
Yeah.
And that literally is how it worked. And so if you had certifications, you could work in IT and be very successful. Mm-hmm. So after 10 years at GE, worked on that degree at Northwestern University, completed that in 2010. So technically, I guess I'm still one of those newer grads. And then went on to Harvard and did a program at Harvard in 2016. Got certified. The program at Harvard was in the executive education under world-renowned Dr. Ronald Heifetz. And so one of the most transformational experiences of my life. Wow. And was certified as a coach in 2015 and did some other things along the way. But I did things to qualify myself to do the work I'm doing now in this leadership space.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Yeah. Yeah, my father actually did a executive program at Harvard, and he had amazing good things to say about it. So,
it's an amazing experience because number one, obviously, it attracts a lot of people from around the globe.
Yeah,
in our class of 60, we 35 people came from another country, and I love that international flavor.
Yeah.
And only a place like Harvard, of course, is going to attract that number of people that are willing to. Mm-hmm. To invest in a program like that at that scale. Mm-hmm. And the other cool thing is with the executive education program, Harvard's one of the few Ivies that actually give you alumni status if you do that program. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the cool pieces.
He's got a harvard.edu email, that's what he said.
The other nice thing they do is with Professor Heifetz, it was a little bit different because he has a class that people literally are waitlisted for years. Mm-hmm. So even if you are a Harvard degree-seeking student, you don't get a chance to study with him.
Wow.
It was a nice privilege to be able to get that. And then he did something really nice about 4 weeks ago. He held a retreat for alumni of the program. He picked 18 people, and we were a part of that.
Wow.
And I was really excited and privileged to be one of those 18 folks. He had never run a retreat. He's been teaching for 35 years. And he did a one-time retreat, advanced leadership retreat of folks who had completed the program either as a degree-seeking student or executive education. Mm-hmm. And we were taking into a nice review of what we'd learned in the past, mm-hmm. but he introduced some new things that he's been working on for us. Even at 35 years in, he's still creating new scholarly research. Got a chance to meet a really nice lady, Beth Quill, who was a fellow Houstonian. So Harvard brought us together because we had never met each other. And so to go that far, meet somebody, and now she and I are bound forever.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. The other thing that I was super excited to talk, you know, with you about today, how people tick and, you know, what makes a business go around is the people in it. So you know, you can have the most amazing products and services in the world, but if the people side isn't running the way it needs to, then, you know, you're going to have some problems.
No question about it. Organizational behavior, it's one of those, what I refer to as a horizontal discipline. Mm-hmm. It affects every business, no matter what your business is, obviously. Yeah. And for, it was interesting, when I decided to pursue that degree, I was still working at GE. And when my managers realized I was working on my degree and it was not in IT,
yeah.
She said, "What's wrong with you? Why would you pursue that?" And I found that question rather interesting, because it was like, I think for me, it spoke to what I felt was kind of wrong with IT overall, uh-huh. is that we don't understand enough about, it's not just about IT. We feel like we are the gods of the kingdom, if you will,
yeah.
right? Because we power everything. But really, at the end of the day, it's not about IT, our business, what we were doing. It's about the corporation, the business. Mm-hmm. We are a component of the business. And so for me, understanding how the organization works and structured, to me, would give me more insight as to how my role in IT would better serve the business.
Yeah.
But then also, I had aspirations to start to do more things in leadership and understand what it took to navigate through organizations. And so I think that was the other driver for me.
Hmm.
And so Noxer, my company, is an IT consulting company.
Oh, that's right.
Said, look, you know, you said it's a component, a very critical component at that, right? And I like to think of it as a business enabler, if used yes. correctly. And if those networks that you talked about earlier are designed properly to support the business, you can transform the business around technology.
Absolutely. One of my professors said it best, and I'm drawing a blank. Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh, and I forget which class it was, but he was teaching us, because he had been an executive at Dell. And he says, "I tell all my IT folks that there's no such thing as an IT project. They're just business projects with an IT component."
Terrific.
Yeah.
I like that. So the way the show format works is we like to understand when you had a big idea, it can be personally or in your career, and then dive a little deep on that. Does that sound like something we could do?
Sure. So if I think about that, I probably one of the biggest ideas I've had that I'm really proud of, and I'm proud of it because of how many people it affected and the results it produced, would be something I call facilitated collaboration. And this idea that you bring people together for collaboration, which is the big buzzword in business these days, but it shouldn't be left to happenstance. It needs to be facilitated. Mm-hmm. It needs to be structured, controlled, guided. So at the last corporation I worked for, I enlarged on something I started on in 2008. And I worked for the executive search firm, the largest executive search firm at the time, based in Chicago, Heidrick & Struggles. And I was brought in by a gentleman named Bob Dean. And he taught me the business of talent development. And so it was right at that cusp. In fact, I met him at Northwestern University. Right at that cusp where I was working on leadership, had this desire, he taught me the businesses and brought me in at the executive search firm with all these leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a challenge, though. Right at that time, the financial crisis had just hit.
Hmm.
And so the CEO said, "Help me get these folks out of planes, but still power up the business." Still, they needed to learn certain things. They needed to accomplish certain things with clients. And so Bob made an investment in me to work, because I still was this IT person, right? Learning leadership. So I could talk to the IT team and convert things and then bring it back to the learning and talent development team and speak both languages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I created a way that you deliver learning, but then later on I started delivering meetings across the globe using, we used Adobe Connect at that time. So instead of using the in-house WebEx tool, which we considered to be a user serviceable tool, we wanted to create basically a program, and it literally became a broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was not something that people attended and were multitasking during. People were engaged. They were locked in. So much so that we had the CEO support, and we had the CEO come on and do some of the programs with me.
Hmm.
That started there in 2008, 2009. Later on, as I came here to Texas and I worked in the energy services field, applied that with some newer technologies. What we did then was revolutionary. Especially with cameras. IT people didn't want you to run cameras because of bandwidth, right?
Yeah.
Especially in 2008, 2009. It was not where it is today. So when I came here to oil and gas, I found that oil and gas industry in many ways are still stuck in 2008, 2009.
They still are.
Yeah. They had Windows XP installed. I mean, they hadn't upgraded to Windows 7.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. So it was much of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now introducing something, and it was seemed revolutionary to them, this idea that, yes, let's use cameras. Yes, let's think about moving to, as the IT department did, move to Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then I introduced Adobe again, and we refined the things we worked on earlier. Bob was actually with me on this again and opened the door for this project as well. And so we did this again, and it, again, landed into the C-suite. And it started off as one of those things that folks didn't think. First of all, they asked me, why are you doing this? They said, you can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a few prototypes, and it was successful, and we did do it. Ended up in the C-suite, to where I was facilitating the most important meeting of the corporation. The CEO sent me an email one day, and he said that, not the CEO, his direct report, one of the executives, other executives, he says, I need to meet with you. And he had copied the CEO. And so I said, okay. And I went to my boss. I said, hey, have you seen this? He said, yeah, I know all about it. I said, are you okay with this? He said, yeah, we talked. And so I went and I had the meeting. And that's when he told me that he wanted me to help run that meeting, because the most important meeting of the year was the quarterly business review. And he was being faced with having to reduce it to 2 times a year. It wouldn't be quarterly, because he couldn't afford to keep flying all the executives around the globe. And so they travel a little bit different than you and me, Brian. Laura probably has that status. So we did that. And so that allowed us to allow the corporation, because again, it's about the business, to still do business. The most important meeting of the year was still being able to held quarterly, but it was held twice face-to-face, twice virtual.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the year, it was tallied by the accountants that every time that meeting was run virtual, we literally saved the corporation $500,000.
Wow.
So $1 million a year, which we believe obviously contributes to saving some jobs a little bit longer, mm-hmm. allowing resources to be applied to other parts of the business.
Hmm.
So there was a true financial savings, a true job savings, and still allowed the productivity to happen.
Hmm.
And some of the best quotes I had at the end of each of those programs, where I polled the executives in writing, they would say that it was the best in class. They didn't feel like they'd sacrifice anything. And in fact, they appreciated being able to run that virtually and have the rest of their day,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to have lost that time and travel as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things I'm most proud of. And I think that more and more small businesses are starting to understand the power of using such technologies.
Yeah.
Some of those technologies that cost a lot of money, like Adobe, didn't even offer a consumer level.
Mm-hmm.
They now offer a $49 a month option. They didn't do that before.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can use technology such as Zoom for $14.99.
Yeah,
right?
Use Zoom.
Yeah. So small businesses have more of these type of technologies in their reach. You know, bandwidth is not as much of an issue anymore. And so a lot of nice solutions that people once may not have even considered have really opened up their new vistas.
Well, that's a really nice story. A couple of things that I liked is that you measured it in terms of impact and the outcome,
mm-hmm.
and even translated it into saving jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels good at the end of the day. One of my other favorite parts about it is you talked about winning in a down economy. Mm-hmm. So how do you win? Well, you recognize that there's reduction in travel budgets. And so how do you capitalize on that? How do you use the unique skills that you got in IT and then the communication skills that you learned in IT to be able to speak to the ponytails and communicate mm-hmm. that back to the boardroom? So that's terrific. So let me put you on the spot and ask, did you make any mistakes along the way?
There's always mistakes. There's always mistakes. I think that there's typically two, especially when you know something like that. I think mm-hmm. the first mistake I'd say is in terms of with the technical implementation, you're always at the mercy of technology. So sometimes, even though I would test and test and test, some things didn't necessarily go right initially. But I think that for the high-level programs that we did run, we had a really solid rate, 98% success rate, 99% success rate, which is why the CEO was willing to do that. Then the other component I think perhaps would be that I was measuring my the other measurement that I was looking at was more user satisfaction. And I think a large part was because it was more prototyping initially, and then it took off. And so taking off and then managing that demand, I probably in the future, if I were to do that, would be to find a way to get more people who could assist me sooner. And then also then now start to have different metrics of measurement that I could implement.
That's kind of the next question I was going to ask, and it's, did you have to ask for help, or is it just, I wish I asked for help? Were there times when you had to reach out and ask for other people?
This was interesting. So I literally had to do all this alone. I had the great fortune of having a great sponsor. And so a lot of times when I'm talking with young people or even with adults and I'm talking to senior people inside of corporations, I talk about the importance of having a sponsor. Because in terms of the implementation, it was all on me. But in terms of making it happen, getting the approvals, the director that I did not report to directly, but the director, he made it happen. He gave me approval. In fact, I remember when IT said, especially when it came to the cameras, I said, no, my programs need cameras. That's a key component to what I'm trying to make work. That's, and there's a lot of methodology. I had a little one-page slide I used to show it. And I said, I remember saying, oh, and it was even before that, because they wouldn't buy it. So I said to the director, I said, just give me your approval. Tell IT to get out of the way. Mm-hmm. I will buy it. I will pay for it. That's what I said to him. Yeah. I said, because I believe this is going to work. So before everything became successful, that's how convinced I was. And he finally, he looked at me. He says, okay, Eddie. He says, I will do that. He says, and I will pay for it. So I got both. So that was a big success because I was taking a big risk, right? Mm-hmm. I was new to the oil and gas industry, new to Texas, which I learned was a crime in itself, not being born here.
But you got here as fast as you could.
I got here as fast as I could. Tried to right my wrongs. So I was basically this outsider. So it's like, why are we listening to this guy? Why would we trust him? Right. So, but yeah, so that was actually really, really key. And I actually forgot about that until you asked me that. And so it was a lot of risk taking. And then after a while, it became proven, so much so that they actually turned that into a full department for the corporation because they realized you needed more of this.
Terrific. That's a really nice story and a great case study. You have this all written down somewhere? And
I don't, but I probably should. So that's a nice segue. It will be a part of my book for March 2019. It's called Facilitated Collaboration, How to Lead and Influence Anything. So
yeah, this is another book on the backside of the book we have coming out.
Yes. The interesting thing is the book that's going to come out in March 2019 was supposed to come out in 2017. When my memory was a lot fresher about these things and I didn't need them jogged, like the questions you just asked me, which is good. So that's a book that I got shipped off to New York. I spent a year on a contract in New York that actually you and I were kind of talking about before we started. And that delayed me. And then I married the most beautiful woman in the world on 7/7/17, so that knocked stuff out a little bit further.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And so I found myself, as I made the shift, especially having applied some of the things I've been learning from Dr. Heifetz, to speaking about leadership exclusively. And then I rebranded myself as the Leadership Accelerator, because at the same time I'm helping to accelerate the development of leaders, I'm helping them to go higher. Yeah. So I used a little play on that, the Accelerator. As I did that, I started to get requests to speak on that topic. And I've done a couple. In fact, I did a keynote at Success North Dallas at the beginning of the month, about 200 senior executives. It was really nice to be there with Bill Walsh and his team. They've been running that for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so they have a nice following of people to come out. So I realized I need a book for this. So that led to me creating a book that should have come out last month, but we're looking at September now. 140 simple messages to guide emerging leaders. And so I've locked in on this market of emerging leaders because it's a target audience, I believe, that is underserved. And so 140 simple messages, the length of a tweet. And that used to be 140 characters, but now it's 280. So all the messages are 280 or less because, as some people said to me, I don't want to read a long scholarly book.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay. I used to write for Forbes, and they capped us at 400 characters per post for the question and answers. And I've had like over 30,000 people read the most popular ones. So that let me see that there's a market for these 140 messages that are quick, succinct, easy to read, but each of them have a story behind it. Mm-hmm. So that's the book that's coming soon.
That's where 140 comes from. I thought that was an odd number. Well, an even odd number. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Do you have a favorite?
Do I have a favorite? That's a good question. I will tell you one that comes to mind the most readily, because each of them has a meaning. Some of them are things my mom said or my dad. Mm-hmm. Given some of the challenges or things I find myself that I've gone through in my career, mm-hmm. there's a man who I deeply revered. His name was Dan Sidlick. And Dan Sidlick would say, learn to bloom where you've been planted. In other words, sometimes we want a better situation. This job I'm in, or it could be a relationship I'm in. Learn to bloom where you're planted. Make the most of the situation you're in. And if you water it enough, you might bloom into a wonderful flower and find that you make the entire place better.
I like that. That's really nice. And it's really true. You know, I mean, I think that's true also. A lot of times we beat up on ourselves about our circumstances. And, you know, I actually do mindset coaching, and one of the things that we've talked about is it's not your circumstances. Mm-hmm. And you'll see two mm-hmm. people with the same circumstances, and one makes a totally different story out of it than the other. So I think, you know, that's great. You know, bloom where you're planted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Two things we always ask our guests. The first is, outside of your books, and I'll have the links when they're available. I'll make sure they're on the site. What's a book recommendation that you've had that's helped you, or something you'd like to share with our listeners?
What I often recommend, especially as a coach, mm-hmm. is Goals by Brian Tracy. It's an oldie but goodie. And even though it's a book that's been published years ago, I refer to it often because even as adults, sometimes I find that we stop setting goals. Mm. And as one gentleman said, he who has no goals, goes nowhere. So yeah, that's a really good book that calls us individuals to redefine where are they? When's the last time you've even set a goal? And if you haven't set one, here's some parameters for how you should set a goal to get the most out of your current circumstances or your future circumstances that you should want. Mm-hmm.
Terrific. So Goals by Brian Tracy. How about software? Any applications or anything you can recommend? You're a tech guy.
Yeah,
so.
Coming from the IT tech guy.
Being that I've been working in the leadership space, I think that probably the biggest software that I had been talking about for a long time was Evernote. But then something happened. I found myself needing to I'm a big note taker, and I stopped taking notes on paper. And I invested in this little guy here. The Apple Pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love the Apple Pencil. So in terms of a technology tool, this is probably the thing I'm most excited about, because on my iPad, I take the iPad to all my meetings now. I don't take notepads anymore. But Evernote, which I love, doesn't handle the writing transcription as well. So mm-hmm. Notability is an app that works on my iOS computer, my MacBook computer, my iPad, my iPhone. So any notes I make on the iPad sync across everything. And then I put those in Evernote. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Apple Pencil and Notability. Notability is amazing because it does a great job with the hand transcription, records the voice, put your images in there. It's awesome. Mm.
Terrific. Notability, I got it. What does one of those run me, Apple Pencil?
The Apple Pencil is, I believe,
it's like 90 bucks or something.
Is it 90? Yeah, I can't remember.
Maybe it's like 90 or 100, that's over 100 bucks.
Expensive pencil.
Yeah, it's an expensive pencil.
So for a long time, I resisted it because of that. But then I started to realize, yeah, this is a good investment.
Well, we talked about the books coming out. Anything else you want to put out there? How do people find you?
Eddie Turner across all the social media channels will pull me up. And my website is eddieturnerllc.com.
Very good. And, you know, we know you're heading to Chicago for the Women's Conference. Anything else big coming up, or you got the books coming out? Anything else you want to share?
Right now, I think that's probably the biggest thing. The release of Emerging Leaders in September 2018, facilitated collaboration March 2019. Those are the big things on the list right now. Oh, I will be speaking in Chicago about Emerging Leaders in October.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, very good. Thanks for having us. Thanks for coming on this show.
Well, Brian and Laura, thank you both for having me. What a treat.
Yeah, thanks, Eddie. It was great to meet you. And I think you're doing some really amazing things. So I'm going to check out your book and check out Goals So thank you so much. It was great having you on the show.
Thank you.
Well, this is Big Ideas in Small Business. Now get out there and close some business.
See y'all next time.
Central Texas rains the strongest drink I've found.
Thank you for listening to Big Ideas Small Business. Follow us at BISB Media and visit our website at www.bisbmedia.com.